Good evening, everybody. I'm Tracy Ray from Pink Pigeon Media, and I'm just absolutely thrilled to be here for another session talking about social media to build your practice. Tonight's module is module 6 about blogging, and I'm especially excited about this because blogging is one of my favorite things about social media. And I want to tell you that in this session, I'm going to stop a couple times so that you can ask questions. So you might want to jot something down if it comes to mind, so when the opportunity comes up, you'll be able to ask your question. And I'm also hoping that at the end we'll have time enough to go through the questions that were sent to me previously and anything else that you have on your mind and open up dialogue. I'm here until you're done asking your questions, so you don't have to feel rushed at the end. And I'm also available at any time in the coming weeks. If something comes up, you'll have my contact information at the end of this PDF, and you are always welcome to contact me with questions, and I will answer them to the best of my ability. So starting out talking about blogging, I mentioned just a second ago that this is one of my favorite things to talk about, and one of the reasons is because blogging is such a wonderful creative outlet and such an easy and effective way to establish yourself as an expert in your field. And while you're busy reaching human readers, which is really where the rubber meets the road, you're also reaching search engines and boosting your page rank for your website or your blog page. And so you've got two audiences being tickled at the same time. So it's a very effective way to bring your page rank up for your website and have a creative outlet. So I really like this a lot. So let's go ahead and dive into page 2 of your PDF that you should have in front of you, 5 reasons that you should blog. There are a lot more reasons than just 5, let me say that. But these are the things that are the most important in my opinion. The very first thing that you want to keep in mind is it's important that you drive traffic to your website, which is also known as getting you discovered online. And even if you don't have a website, you should still blog, in my opinion, because of the last 2 points on this list that we'll talk about in a second. Driving traffic to your website is, of course, one of the most important things for you to be found online, and a blog is a great way to do that. To increase your SEO and SCRP is the second point on here, which ties into the website. SEO stands for your search engine optimization, and SERP stands for search engine results page. And so what you want to do is you want to increase your search engine results so that your page rises to the top of a Google search or any other search engine search. To increase your SEO and SERP is very important. For those with a website, this is a critical point, because if you're like me, your website will typically sit for months, and sometimes it can sit for years with no changes to it, especially if yours isn't one that has a product that needs to be added or swapped out or deleted. It can sit there and grow stagnant. And because we know that search engines love fresh content, search engine spiders that are busy crawling and indexing sites, they want new and unique stuff they've never seen before. That's exciting. So every time you post a blog that's never before been posted, that's one way to freshen up your website significantly, giving it, you know, good, unique, fresh keywords for search engines to analyze to have better help index your site. So SEO-wise, a blog is like a real super bolt of juice. So it's important for that reason. And you already know as coaches that building trust is really critically important. You need to be trusted if people are going to come to you. By publishing factual, accurate, and useful content frequently, by offering readers something useful and of value, you're establishing yourself as one who can be trusted, which then directly leads into the 4th reason, which is positioning yourself as an expert. And again, quality information that readers find useful will put you in the position to be an expert. And of course, this just leads to clients. And the final one is to build a mailing list. And I probably have said this in every session if you've been in any of my other classes, you've heard me say this, and I couldn't possibly emphasize this enough, the importance of building a mailing list. It really is your lifeblood for keeping in touch with those who elect to connect with you. With a mailing list, people are coming to you saying, I want to be on your list. That's very valuable information. You're not chasing people down and forcing something down their throats. They've signed up. They want to hear from you. So it's important to build that mailing list. And this is one way to do it, because you can add a subscriber button and capture email addresses that way, and then begin to build your list and do email blasts and that sort of thing. One question that I'm often asked is found on the next page, and it's, how does blogging drive traffic to my website? And really, it's the fact that it exists out there and is being indexed by Google, things are happening on your behalf without your knowledge to some degree. But you can drive traffic through the links that you post on your social networks like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, any of them that you use where you can post a link back to your blog post. And you don't have to do it just once. You can do it numerous times. In particular with Twitter, you can post a link over and over and over again with varying verbiage on your tweets and continue to drive traffic, even to posts that could be weeks or months old, even years, if the information is relevant and useful. And you can also do this by mailing to those on your mailing list, like sending out email blasts. Again, the importance of composing a mailing list, that this is where that kicks in. And yet another question that I'm often asked when it comes to blogging is on the following page. And this may pertain to some of you. Can I blog without a website? And the answer is yes. In fact, it's absolutely yes. And you shouldn't let a website, the lack of a website, get in your way. But can I just say you really need a website? Now, I understand that it could be that that's just not happening for you right now. And there are plenty of compelling reasons that you might need to wait. And so I'm not, I'm not saying that all is lost. All is not lost by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying that you really do need a website at some point, but if you don't have one, don't let it stop you from blogging or getting the word out there about you and your expertise. There are other venues for which to do that. If you want to blog and don't have a website, take a look at the following page, because on that page you'll see some blogging sites that I listed for you that you could use to get started. These are sites that will host your blog for you. WordPress.com. In previous sessions, I've discussed the difference between WordPress.com and .org, and I'm not going to go into that in length here with any detail, other than to say that if you're going to do, if all you're going to do for just right now is blog and just blog and nothing else, then you can do it at WordPress.com for free. And that's a good option. Squarespace.com, Blogger.com, Tumblr, and Typepad, those are also good options. These are all free services. You can upgrade a few of these, I think, but for the most part, they're free services. And the thing that you really just have to know about them is that there are limitations with free services. And some of you may have already encountered this. These limitations, they may be okay for a while. They may serve you just fine for a while, but as your practice grows, the likelihood is that you'll want to invest some money in a website so that you can host your own blog and do your own thing with little to no limitations. I mean, just as a for instance, one limitation on a free blogging site is that you can't earn money on a free blog. Now, this would mean you're not going to be able to put a payment portal if you have an email, an ebook or a hard copy book for them to order. You can have a link to Amazon, but you can post about a link to Amazon, but you can't receive monies and that sort of stuff and do business or take payments, for instance, if your clients pay you online. Some people can do that on their website. You're not going to be able to do that on a free blogging site. There are also other limitations. For instance, if you're using a free blogger site, you'll be considered a subdomain. So your domain name will be something like, if I were a coach, it would be TracyRayCoaching.com, I would hope. But I wouldn't be able to do that on a free blog. It would be something more like TracyRayCoaching.blogger.com. And that's not the end of the world. I mean, it's not. And I wouldn't want that to keep you from getting started, because I think you need to get started. It's just, as your practice grows and you begin to establish yourself in your business, you'll want to ditch the word blogger and just have it say TracyRayCoaching.com or whatever it is your domain name is. So to have a clean domain name, you'd have to purchase that domain and then pay for hosting, so that you no longer are a subdomain. So, I think you should do it, even if you don't have a website. I think it's better to get out there and get known and begin to explore this world of blogging than to hold back just because of a website. So what is the first step to successful blogging? Turn the page, and let's just say the first thing is that you must define your blog. You need to map out a plan, at least in your mind, about what your blog is going to be about. And it's based on what your coaching practice is. For instance, the finance coach is going to blog about all aspects of money. The relationship coach, for instance, would blog on all aspects of relationship, and you may be sitting on the other end of this line saying, well, duh. But it's surprising the number of people who just fall completely off the wagon of what the purpose of their blog is. And it might not sound like a terribly big deal, but if you do it just once in a while and frequently, then it's really not a big deal. It's nothing to be worried about. But if you completely are all over the place on your blog all the time, then you're going to confuse search engines, who won't be able to then return search results to searchers looking for you. For relationship coach, don't stray too far from relationship issues. Sure, you can blog about money as long as it relates to how couples manage money issues. Then you've made the tie together. So just always tie the main reason for your blog to the topic of your blog post. And there's a lot of leeway here and a lot of ways to do that. A finance coach, you don't want to throw yourself out there as some sort of relationship expert. It's what you really are, is a finance expert who coaches people on finances. Now, that doesn't mean you can't talk about couples. Obviously, you can. If what you're talking about is money within the context of couples, or couples within the context of money, it is okay to stray once in a while. It's your blog. Just keep in mind that you're writing for two audiences, people and search engine spiders. And it's important to the search engine spiders that they understand what your blog is about, so that they can deliver those search results to searchers and give them what they're asking for. If you run off track too often, it may hurt your page rank, and Google really won't know what to do with you. So stay true to the genre of your blog. You can, and you really should, involve current events anytime that you can. This can tremendously help your page rank, because hot topics get big bursts of Google searches. But I have to say with a caution, this really has to be done with authenticity, not for the purposes of cashing in on the hot topic just because you know it's being Googled like crazy. And as an example of that, back in 2009, I worked for an ad agency, and the owner was real big into social media. And he wrote this big, long, very long press release about Michael Jackson's death because he knew it was trending. And he did it for the sole purpose of having people wind up on our company website, which is an advertising website. Totally came off as opportunistic, and the entire staff was completely mortified. Had he in some way found a genuine and authentic way to tie our advertising company or our product to the tragedy with some kind of honesty, it would work. It would work. You know, if he brought value to this in some way that made a connection, but there was no correlation. It just looked collectively snarmy. And so I say that to say this: if it fits, do it. If it doesn't, don't go there. But think of the flip side now. I gave you that bad example, but here's a good example. Just think right now, Bill Cosby's trending for a negative reason, true. But in my opinion, a relationship coach really has a lot of valuable information and expertise to bring to the table of this discussion. This entire debacle is a teachable moment in many, many ways. And a relationship coach could do that with authenticity and still cash in, so to speak. I don't really like to use that word in this context because I'm talking about being authentic. You're bringing something valuable to the table. But the fact is, it will help your page rank because Bill Cosby's a hot topic. But I think you can probably see the difference in those two examples. One had no business going there, and the other, it's relationships of your business. And this is a good example. So use hot topics wisely, authentically, and bring something relevant to the table. Another thing that I was asked, in fact, in advance of this course, one of you wrote this question in, and of course I get asked it all the time, and it's about generating blog article ideas. It's fine to have a blog, and it's great when there's hot topics going on, but what about those times when you're just stuck and you don't know what to do and you feel like you've said everything there is to say? One thing you have to keep in mind is that as coaches in your area of expertise, you probably have the curse of knowledge. And by that I mean that you're so familiar with what you are so good at that you forget that there are some finer points, some detailed points that you could drill down on for some of us who aren't experts. You need to know some of the finer points. But it's hard for you to know what those are because you are kind of blinded by your own expertise. You've known this for so long. And I hear this question all the time. I just can't come up with any more ideas. I'm stuck. Well, I have some very practical ideas that will help you. And I'm telling you, this method really goes for the jugular, and I hope that you'll find it as practical as I think it is. It is to your benefit to write blog posts about what people want to know about. I mean, it's not, when you really think about this, it's not to your benefit to just write what you're interested in. You have to write what others are interested in and what they're searching for. It's also to your benefit to use the very words, the very key words that people out there are using to search out a certain topic that they're interested in. And that's about SEO. That's about search engine optimization. And you can combine these two objectives by doing a very simple search, even if it's on a broad topic. And now turn to the next page. I have my own guide I'm looking at, and then you have the PDF I sent, so I think it's page 7. It will say at the top, generating blog article ideas, and that's the page I want you to be on. You can combine these two objectives by doing a very simple search, even if it's on a very broad topic. For instance, for the purposes of this example, it's a little bit a fuzzy screen capture I've got there, so I hope you can see it, but I chose to Google blended family problems. And from that Google search, it shows me the top 4 searches that people like you and me, real live human beings, are out there searching for, like now. This is current information. This is now information. This is a goldmine of information. From this, just this one return, this one search return, I could write an article titled Blended Family Pros and Cons. And because a whole lot of people are out there searching that term exactly, and I know this because it's showing up on this screen as one of the top 4, I'm really Google juicing this because I've got, not only do I have keywords that I know are being searched, but they're in the order that they're being searched most often exactly as people are searching them. It's like, blam, there you've got just this gold mine. We already know people want this information. So there's a topic for you right there in that one search. And this is just done in your Google search bar, which is one reason I wanted to have your computer open in case you just wanted to give it a whirl, just to see what would turn up if you wanted to do that. On the very next page, I've got 3 more examples of this because this is another way to do this. In this first search that I showed you, I did blended family problems. That just came to my mind. But what if I am so stuck, and this happens, that the word problems couldn't even come to me? All I could think of was blended family. If I'm really, really stuck that far, or looking just to find out what people are looking for, maybe I'm not stuck. Maybe I've got plenty of ideas, but I don't know if others want to know about it, and that's key. I can use this method that I've done where I put in the word blended family and then the letter A just as a starting point to see what's going to return. I did it with the letter B. I did it with the letter C. And, of course, you can see, you can drill down on that as far as you want to go with the alphabet. I could do blended family AB, you know, and go that far with it. But just take a look at how this worked. Blended family and then the letter A gives me another gold mine. You can see the very top one is blended family articles. Well, you know what? That's pretty cool. Because if you click on that and you find a whole treasure trove of articles others have written, there's a whole nother great big place where you can grab ideas. You don't want to grab their articles, obviously, but you do want to grab those ideas and rewrite them and make them your own and bring something of you to the table. Again, we already know that these search terms are getting searched. People obviously want articles about blended families. So this just brings you to a whole new place where you can find more ideas. The search also uncovered another blogger who apparently blogs specifically about blended family issues. So what is he or she blogging about? You can swipe those ideas and make them your own. But wait, there's more. You can also use keyword search tools online. And some of these are free and some of these are paid. Even though I do social media for a living, I have yet to use a paid service. I've gotten so much good information that's been useful to me using the free tools. So I have yet to pay for one. And I'm not saying that it's not worth it. It may very well be, but I haven't really needed it. And I'm in the biz. There's plenty of information out there to keep me busy. But you can use search tools online. So turn to the next page. What I've done here is I went to a site, I accessed a site called keywordtool.io, keywordtool.io. And this is a free keyword tool search spot. And they, and I've got this on that page, so you can refer to it later, keywordtool.io. They use the ABC method for organizing these search results, and this is another treasure trove of blog article ideas. And, yes, these are keyword combinations that are currently being searched by Internet users, a veritable gold mine. We know that this is current information. People are searching for these things right now. And, again, I know that my screen capture is a little bit fuzzy, so it's kind of a little bit hard to read. But you can just see in just this one screen capture, all this is just a handful of things that are available to you, because you can click on any of the letters of the alphabet up there, and it will bring you a whole new set based on that letter. But take a look at all the different topics. Blended family autism. Very specific topic people are looking for. Blended family and finances. See how even the finance coach can benefit from that and just turn that around. So this is absolutely a gold mine. So I would encourage you to visit keywordtool.io and play around with that, and also play around with just your basic Google search to see what turns up. These ideas, the further you drill down, the more interesting it gets. And there will be ideas in here that you never thought of and you didn't know people were looking for. That's what's even more curious about it. I'd like to stop right now and see if there's any questions, because we're going to talk about the anatomy of a blog post next. And so let's just stop right now and see if there's any questions so far about finding blog topics or where to go to build a blog, anything that's on your mind. Does anybody have anything? I'm going to take a sip of water and take a breath and let you chime in if you want.
Just a reminder, if you have a question, press *6.
Yeah, you could be just talking away and not realize that you didn't press *6 and everybody's missed it.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm wondering what you think. I have a domain name that I got through GoDaddy, and I'm wondering what you think of using GoDaddy to go further in terms of building, letting them manage a blog and website, or using them for anything other than my domain name. I know I want a blog. I'm not sure quite yet about the website, but I do want to start blogging. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent question. I'm glad you brought it to the table. And I've, if you've ever been in a course with me before, you've heard me say this, so I'm sorry I'm sounding like a broken record. Purchasing a domain name from GoDaddy is perfectly fine. They're actually one of the better priced places to purchase a domain. However, they're not the greatest for hosting. They don't have a super good reputation. I have dealt with them a little bit, and their tech support's not the greatest. They do occasionally go down, not terribly. It's not dreadful, but my issues with tech support were never really great. I don't find them very easy to navigate when you need to get into your control panel. It's a little hard to find your way in the back end of GoDaddy. I am not the only voice out there that really doesn't recommend them. Having bought your domain name from there is perfectly fine. I suggest, and I rant and rave, and I am an affiliate of InMotion Hosting, which is also at the end of your PDF document, and they're the only people that I recommend and the only affiliate for hosting that I recommend that I am an affiliate of, because I absolutely love them more than macaroni and cheese. And I'll tell you, they've been I have been with them now for going on 5 years, and I have needed tech support numerous times, especially when I first started out and first started building websites. And I would break into a cold sweat thinking that I had just broken the entire internet world and I took down the grid and I was just sure I ruined everything for everybody. And they would really just swoop in there and chat with me, and they'd just calm me right down and say, look, we got this. We got this. And when they would try to explain something to me that I just couldn't get, they would back it up and say, okay, let me take care of this part for you, and let me send you this, and I'll send you a transcript of our talk, and they'd walk me through it, and they would fix things for me every time, and they did it with professionalism, with respect. They would be a little playful if I threw that out there, but I have been an absolute fan, which is why at the end of this PDF you'll see the InMotion link where you can purchase hosting. They're the only ones I recommend. They're not the only good ones. I understand Bluehost is good and HostGator is good. But my experiences with InMotion, and I rant and rave about them. What you will have to do with that domain name, if you elect to go with InMotion or someone else, you'll have to contact GoDaddy to have your domain name transferred. It's not a big deal. I think there's a slight fee attached to it, but it'll have to be transferred to whoever you do select as your hosting company. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great. Do we have any other questions? I'll move on. I'll give you a second to chime in if you want, and then we'll move on.
Hi, I have a question.
All righty, go for it.
I'm playing devil's advocate, but I just started blogging on LinkedIn just as a place just to get my feet wet. But what I'm finding is now everybody's blogging on LinkedIn, and then everybody's blogging all over the place, and everyone has a website. And for me personally, I'm reading less and less, and I, you know, just delete things, and because it's too much. And mm-hmm. I'm going, why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I do want to get my name out there. So I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm getting very ambivalent about blogging on LinkedIn. And can you address that somewhat?
Yeah. I think what you're describing is something that I know I have felt myself, and I have definitely heard others in my line of work express this. It's social media and internet overload. We've got so much coming at us so fast. It used to be fun to get an email because it was so new. You remember those days, however many 10, 20 years ago it was? We would get an email and we thought, ooh, this is so exciting. It's not exciting anymore. I dread opening up the email because I'm afraid of the 64,000 things that are going to be sitting in there. Overload is just, I think, a fact of our lives, and we have to streamline our lives, and we have to pick and choose those things that are important to us. The thing I can say about blogging is, first of all, if this is something that you don't want to do, I would not push myself to do it because we are on overload. If it doesn't appeal to you, don't do it. There are benefits to you doing that I can address, and part that I've already addressed, talking to your human readers and your search engine fighters to get you found online. Now, if your practice does not require that you find people online, or if your practice, if you're going to build it right there locally, and you're going to build it by shaking hands and networking and being one-on-one with people, then that's a really different situation. I do think that in this day and age, the vast majority of people have an expectation that a business person, whether coach or any other kind of business, is going to have a website so that they can peek in on you before they make any choices about you. We all like to go to the internet. First thing you do when you hear about something or a product or a cool thing or a cool person or a business opportunity is you go and you Google it. If you're like me, and I think most of us do that, we want to know about this product. Anytime I hear about a product, I'll click it, I'll type in the name of the product, and then I'll say the word reviews after it. So that I saw a really cute shirt the other day from a company I'd never heard of, and the price was outrageously low. So I clicked the reviews and found out this is not the place to go for your shirt. That's just, you know, that's just kind of the way that we operate. So I think it's, in my opinion, it's very important to have a website for that reason, and blogging adds juice to it. But I'm also about quality of life. I'm about the quality of life. If you hate it, I wouldn't recommend trying to do it. I think you should do what you love so that you can shine. If you find that you like some other network better, if LinkedIn does it for you, go to LinkedIn and do what makes your boat float and what jazzes you up. I would suggest, though, that you need to be plugged in somewhere. Pick something, even if you just kind of like it. If it's LinkedIn, then do that. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, so I won't prattle on anymore about that. I hope that I did. I think what you're experiencing is overload, and I feel your pain. I go through that myself.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. All right. Is there anybody else? And we'll move on if not.
Yeah, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Tanya. I didn't find where the outline is at for this course.
Oh, Tanya, if you go to our website for ILCT, it's lifecoachtraining.com, you will find a link on the front page to, there's a link that says listen to calls about coaching. Okay. Go to that link. And then scroll down until you see this call. It should be the third posting, and there's a link right there.
Okay.
Okay.
And that was really it. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Looks like we have one more question, Tracy.
Okay.
You actually answered my question in the next couple of pages.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad I did. Yay.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. All right. Let's talk on, and again, I have my leader's guide, and I think it's page 10, so please forgive me. The page I want you to be on, I think, is 10, and it should say Anatomy of a Solid Blog Post, and you'll see a picture of the famous Brady Bunch on it. So that's where we need to be. Now, as a disclaimer, I wrote this little blog post for the purposes of this class only. For structural example purposes. So any of you coaches out there who are blended family experts who are on the line, I'm just going to ask for your forgiveness in advance and overlook my utter ignorance on this topic that I'm sure that you'll find within the content. I really did just pull it together to give you an idea of some ways you can structure it with keywords. So my expertise is on social media, so just forgive me in advance and we'll plow forward. Here you see the title I chose, Blended Family Birth Order Issues, and I did this. I chose that because when I was doing research for this and I was using blended families just because that was a good place for me to start, I found that phrase specifically, blended family birth order issues. And I read the article that I came across when I dug a little further, and it was very interesting, so that's why I chose that.
Now, when I did my Google search on blended families, I found that title because I did blended family and the letter B, and I came up with birth order issues, and I thought, well, that's interesting. So that's how that happened. That's how I got that idea. And then I swiped those exact keywords in the exact order that they're being searched because I want the Google juice. Okay, so that's how the title itself came about. The title has the keyword in it exactly, and then I chose a subtitle. And I suggest in blog posts that you have your main title and then also a subtitle. And in this case, I said changes in birth order in a blended family. So I've still got birth order and I've got blended family. I dropped the word issues, but I've got those other keywords in there. I have changes in birth order in a blended family can stir conflict. So the subtitle has the same keywords, just ordered differently. If it's at all possible to use keywords in both the title and the subtitle without it reading awkwardly, then do it. And I'm going to say this. I have wasted so much time trying to make something work that wouldn't work, and I'm just saying learn from my mistake and don't do that. If you've tried and you've tried and it's not going to work, forget about it and pick the title that you want. Ultimately, in the end, pick the title that you want. If you can make it work and it reads well, go for it. Put those keywords in there. Now, for the first paragraph, I have the birth order in a blended family, which are keywords, can take on the look and feel of a deck of cards being shuffled. I wanted to use my keywords in the very first sentence, and you always want to do that. Also, for blog posts, you'll want to break up the post into shorter paragraphs than your English lit teacher would have liked you to do. It will feel awkward to you if you're not accustomed to doing it. In a regular article, you'd never have just one sentence like that be on its own. But when you place it on a blog page, it becomes a block of type, so it looks appealing to the eye. So you're going to want to break things up a little more than what you learned to do in your English class. The next paragraph, consider Ken and Carla, who married 2 years ago, each brought children into their new blended family, Ken with his 2 children from his previous marriage and Carla with 3. Okay, so I want to use keywords naturally and authentically throughout this content where it's possible. As you see, I have blended family in that sentence. But don't stuff them in there by sticking them all over the place. I don't want to just take the words blended family and willy-nilly stick it in there. If it reads unnaturally, you really might get penalized by Google and lose your page rank. It's what's called keyword stuffing. And the next sentence illustrates kind of what not to do. And I put it in red. Before the blended family, Ken's kids, Alicia 12, Aaron 10, were accustomed to being the oldest and youngest, respectively, with all the perks, responsibility, and limitations that come with each position. Pre-blended family, Carla's oldest and youngest, Jason 16 and Jasmine 11, were the cookie part of their original family Oreo, with Jessica sandwiched right in the middle at age 13. As a blended family, things changed. A blended family brings change. And then I put a rotten little frowny face because I want to remind you that's not what you, that whole paragraph doesn't read well. And it doesn't read well because I kept trying to stick my keywords in there. So that's a no-no. That's what you don't do. Now, the next paragraph uses the term blended family naturally, so I'm comfortable with it staying, and I have it there in bold, and you can see it's only in there once in that entire paragraph. If it had fit it more in there naturally, I would have put more in there. It's all about reading properly, being a good writer, and reading properly. And the last sentence, I like to see a blog post end with the keywords, and it's usually pretty easy to do because you can almost always bring your title back down in to the final phrase. And as you can see, I did that here. I said, as you can see, the birth order in a blended family matters. But it was easy to do because I'm winding it up. I'm pulling the strings all together at the very end. Now, at the very last sentence of that is the thing is one important thing I want you to note. I have put a question here. Did your birth order change when you entered a blended family? Tell me about it here. It's important that you do something to solicit some kind of response. And a question does that very well. I'm asking you to tell me your story. People like to tell you their story. So open the door for dialogue with a question at the end. And if it's feasible to use your keywords in there, then do that. Anytime you can do that, it's a good thing to do that. So that's a basic anatomy of a blog post. You want your title to be keywords. You want your keywords in the subtitle if possible, and in the first paragraph, preferably the first sentence of the first paragraph if you can do it, because search engines are reading from top left to bottom right, just like we do here in the U.S., and they're putting weight on and deciding where you belong based on these keywords. So if they're up there towards the top, the search engine spiders are thinking, okay, this is about birth order and a blended family, and that's what you want them to think. It becomes a little less important throughout the content as you go further. So on the following page, we're going to very quickly talk about images, because you notice I have that Brady Bunch picture in there, and I am a fan and a believer that every blog post needs to have an image, every single one, every single time. So I want you to go to the next page, which is, I think you should be on page 11 or 12. It says saving images. Saving images is another way that you can Google juice things. The way that you save your image, you have to keep in mind that search engine spiders, this is not for you human readers near so much unless they're sight impaired. This is for your search engine spiders. They don't read an image. They don't look at this Brady Bunch picture and say, hey, there's Carol and Mike Brady. They're going to read how you titled it. And this, again, is a way to stick in some Google juice. Use keywords to save the images and be descriptive for the sight impaired. It's my understanding that whoever the they is cracking down more and more on making sure that images are available to the sight impaired. So we have to start saving them to describe what you see in the image. This particular image I downloaded from the internet. And I got it from like a wiki page or something so that it's free for anybody to use, which is another point I'm going to talk about in just a second, so I won't go into that right here. I saved this particular image as Brady Bunch Blended Family TracyRayCoaching.com.jpg. I wanted the words blended family in there, and I need to tell the world that this is the Brady Bunch. So I got those two things in there, and I stuck my website address in there. I learned that from a very big company, and now it escapes me who it was. It was on the tip of my tongue. But I looked at one of their images to see what they were doing. It was like Premium Saltines or some big company, and they always stuck their website in every image, at the very end of every image, the way that they saved their images, and I thought that was pretty brilliant. Other options might be Brady Bunch Blended Family Birth Order Issues.jpg, which is specifically my keywords with Brady Bunch added. And, you know, as you can see, I put Brady Bunch in every one of these titles because I have to tell people what this is. And I have Brady Bunch Blended Family Birth Order.jpg, Brady Bunch Tracy Ray Coaching.com, Brady Bunch Blended Family Relationship Coaching.com. You have options here, but the takeaway is describe the picture adequately, for specifically with sight impaired in mind, and then stick keywords in there, preferably the title of your article if possible, and if you can, put your website address in there and save your images that way, because search engines read those words and index the image based on the words that you choose and not on the picture that you and I see. And like I said, on the next page, there's a quick caution about images. And you know what? I'm certain that you already know this, but I caution people all the time on this anyway, because we really do have to be careful. Always check the licensing on images. Some things belong to people. It's their property, and you're not free to take it. Some images on the web are free to use, and some are not. And some are free to use only if you apply attribution. So, for your convenience and for you to explore later, I have three different places that you can go for free image download sites. You always do want to be sure to read those conditions before you use photos. Morgfile.com is super cool because it's absolutely free, and they mean it. No attributions necessary. You just download it and pop it in to your blog post, and you're good to go. You don't even have to say, thanks, Morg File, at all. Free Digital Photos is another one. It's free, but they do request that you provide attribution. I have forgotten to do so on several occasions. I've never been called on it, but it's just an oversight on my part. I think all they'd do is probably, if they even know, would call me and say, would you please add attribution? So I like to do that and link back to them anytime I use a photo. On Flickr.com, you have to read these licenses carefully, and you probably all already know this. It is a mixed bag. Some people sell their images. You can't use them at all unless you buy it. Other people say, please use my images, but please tell the world I took this photo. So you really need to look at that by looking at the licensing and figuring that out. And you do need to be careful. People can get sued using property that doesn't belong to them, as you know. So you really can't just find an image anywhere and download it and use it. That's a no-no. You could get in trouble. The other thing that I want to tell you about that actually I did not create a page for this, so I'd like for you to make a note of it. And it is kind of hand-in-hand with this. Not only can you not just go and snag images, but you do not want to go and snag another person's article, even with attribution. And I know none of you would just take someone's article and act like it's yours. We already know that. We all learned that way back in our journalism classes, that's a no-no. So that's not the concern for me, is that you might consider this a great article and give that person attribution and then post the entire article because you love it so much. And even with the credit for someone, even if you have their permission to do so, you won't get in trouble, but it's not a good idea for you to do for your page ranks. And the reason is that duplicate content is really the kiss of death. You really want every single time that you post a blog post on your website or on your blog page needs to be absolutely brand new, unique content for search engines. They don't want the same old stuff. What's going to happen is if you take somebody else's article and you repost it, even with attribution, these Google spiders look at it and say, well, I've seen that before. I'm going to give credit to the guy who posted it first. So you don't get any Google credit from it whatsoever, and it'll just drop you down the page, and you might lose some steam by posting duplicate content. Now, can you pull parts of it out as a quote? Absolutely. But I would strongly urge you never to repost something that's been posted before in its entirety, even with attribution, because it's kind of a kiss of death because it's duplicate content. This includes your own stuff. If you posted it somewhere else online, don't repost it again. Rewrite it. Have it fresh and new and clean with a new, and even give it a new twist and bring more to the table this time. Okay, so that's that. And I would like to talk about dealing with comments. The main reason I wanted to bring this up is because I've been asked recently by a customer who had somebody deliberately posting some negative things on her site, and it was distressing. I want to say that this is really not the norm. It doesn't happen very often. The page, I'm hoping that your page and my page matches up. It's page 14, dealing with comments in your PDF. Dealing with comments. Most blog sites allow for you to set a setting where you either allow comments or you don't allow them, or you allow them once the very first post has been approved by you, or you can make it a setting where every single comment has to be approved by you. The way that I have set mine up that has worked for me well is I always make sure that a poster who has never posted before, that I get a flag and I have to approve that comment first before they can ever post again. The thought here is that once you've approved of a person's first acceptable comment, chances are that commenter is going to be acceptable going forward. But like I said, you can set it so that you can approve of each and every one and nothing slips through if you'd like. I do it the other way. Once I've approved you once, then you're free to come back and post some more. I also have the setting to alert me every time that there's a post so that I can always make sure that I do like it. And if it's something that I don't like that ended up there, that I can remove it or respond to it. But that most blog places have settings from which to choose, and you should do that straight up and right away before you can start blogging, is get those settings set up. You can keep control by setting alerts when there's a new comment. This way, you won't have any surprises. If you're a WordPress user, you can install a plugin called Akismet, A-K-I-S-M-E-T, Akismet. It filters out spam comments and puts them all in a file for you. You can breeze through them to say, yes, indeed, this is spam, and then just empty the folder, and then they never get posted. It's like something like $5 a month or a quarter or something like that to have Akismet. It might be a quarter, $5 a quarter, something like that. Always respond to the comments that you approve, and the point of having a blog is to generate interaction. So make sure that you're true to yourself and that you're true to your readers and that you respond to them, even if it's thank you so much for taking the time to read this post. Just post something that acknowledges that they've gone to your blog and made a post. And finally, on page 15, how do people actually find your blog? And I mentioned it earlier about posting links so that you can keep getting traffic to your blog or to your website on social pages. But you can also announce the opening of your new blog, just like you would a grand opening at a store, on your Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or all your other social networks. And, of course, send email to your friends and family and ask them to subscribe to your blog. Ask them to post comments for a while. And don't be afraid to ask people to share your blog and to subscribe to your blog. One way that your blog is going to attract attention from Google and from readers too, but from Google in order to increase your page rank, is when there's activity on it and when people from all over the country or maybe even all over the world, depending on how you're putting it out there, how long people stay on it speaks to Google. If somebody goes there and clicks away, that tells Google one message. If somebody goes there and stays there 20 minutes, or 10 minutes or 15 minutes reading your blog, that tells Google something very different. And when people stop and comment on your blog or share your blog or take that link and post it to someplace else or tweet your blog, it tells Google that this is an important blog. People are paying attention to this blog. So it's in your best interest, especially when you're first starting out and you're trying to establish your blog, to gather up some friends and family who will commit to visiting your blog every week when you post, and posting a comment and sharing it with people. And then you go there and interact and start getting the movement. And then more and more people will begin to join in, and your family and friends won't have to do you that favor for very long, just for a little while. So, okay, so now I'd like to open it up for Q&A. We're at 7:54, it's almost 8 o'clock. And I'd like to open it up for Q&A on page 16 of your PDF. I have the questions along with my answers to questions that were asked previous to the session tonight. And so I want to go ahead and run through those, and then we can open it up for that if anyone has further questions. And I'm here until you're done. The first question on page, it's either 15 or 16, I think, on your PDF. It says Q&A at the top. So sorry about that if you're having to flip through. Question is, how often should blog entries be posted? There's not a hard and fast answer to this. There's not one right answer. And one social media guru might tell you one thing and somebody else might tell you another. My word is this, do it as often as you can, as long as what you're posting is quality and brings something of value to the reader. At the very least, once a week, I think. But I wouldn't want to see you sweat this. Just do what you can do. I do say be consistent. If you decide you're going to post once a week, pick the same day of the week every week, especially for subscribers, because they'll begin to get used to seeing an email flag that says, hey, here's a new blog post. Click this link and go to it. And if they're used to seeing that every Wednesday, they'll start looking forward to it every Wednesday. So pick a day of the week. And, you know, which day of the week? You know, people have different opinions about that, and it changes. Like every 6 months, the gurus tell us something different. For a while it was Wednesday is the best day, and then it was Tuesday, and it flops around. So you might want to just do some research and see what they're saying this week, and know that ultimately it comes down to what you can do and what's convenient and what makes sense for you in your blog. But I think once a week to me is a great starting point. Another question, how should one plan content ideas or determine what to write about? And really, hopefully, this module gave you some practical ideas you can implement right away. Another option is to ask your existing clients or friends and family what topics they would find useful. And again, I like visiting other people's blogs who are writing in the same genre to see what they're talking about. That's another way. Question, how do you recommend going about writing content? Now, there's a number of ways I can interpret this question, but I came at it this way. Writing content, some people get scared about it. They're not writers. I mean, maybe you're a writer, maybe you're not. Some life coaches are, some aren't. My background is writing, so for me, see, this is fun. This is play. But I come from a magazine and advertising background, so it kind of makes sense that this is a good fit for me. And if it's not for you, then this is you're going to come at this question differently than I would. The first thing I'd say is give yourself permission to write badly so that you can at least have the freedom to start. If you're sitting back in a panic, afraid it's going to stink, you're going to hold yourself back. So just throw all that out and decide, okay, I have perfect permission for this to reek when I'm done. You don't have to publish it. Just get started. Start pedaling the bike. Pick a topic, cut to the chase. That's the thing with blog posts. Don't lead into it. Don't take paragraphs to get to the point. Hit them right away, bam, with what you're going to talk about. Pick your topic, cut to the chase. Keep your post between 300 and 500 words. Unless you're just such a compelling writer and you're so amazing at it that people can't turn away, it needs to be short. People are just overloaded. You know, the first question we had was, not the first, but one of you asked, hey, I'm overloaded. I'm seeing so many of these things. I'm tired of it. Well, you got to keep it short for that reason. And I do recommend creating an editorial calendar as a guide that keeps you moving forward. Just sit down, decide on the next 8 topics you're going to post every Wednesday and kind of map it out and give yourself a guide and give yourself permission to change it. If a current event comes up that you want to write about because it makes sense and it's a hot topic, yay. But give yourself a little bit of a guide. It's helpful to keep the momentum going. And what are the best practices for creating written content? Comes down to this. Content really must be your original work for the reasons that I already cited. We don't want duplicate content under any circumstances. Quality, relevant, useful, original. Don't post duplicate content ever. If it's been posted before, don't post it again. You can rewrite your brains out. Pick the same topic over and over. There's nothing new under the sun. It's all been covered before somewhere. But just cover it in your original voice. Bring something more to the table. Add something new, a new twist. Your own voice is enough. Just make it yours. So last question, and then I'll open it up. What's your best advice for a brand new blog site or website with blog entries? And I would say have a subscribe button and invite everyone you can, everyone you know, every friend to subscribe to your blog. And use Facebook and any other social platforms to extend that invitation. This goes back to being able to build your mailing list. It's also a way for people to get email alerts every time that you post. And it's an easy way to keep people coming back for more. So those are the questions that you sent me in advance. And so we'll just open the line up now to ask your questions. And I'll take a breath.
Hi, Tracy. This is Amy. We've got about half of our callers have left, so it's a smaller group. I'm just going to go ahead and put it in mute mode, which means if you have a question, just hit *6, and then the line will be open, and you can go ahead and ask.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Tracy. This is Lucy.
Hi, Lucy.
Hi. I have really enjoyed this, and I've been blogging for a while now, but I've learned some great tips, and I really appreciate it. Can a blog be too short?
Excuse me. Thank you for your encouragement. I'm very glad that you've gotten something out of this. I try very much to be practical so that when you walk away, you've got stuff you can do right away and implement right away. So I'm very glad that that's working for you. I'll tell you, one of the best bloggers out there, Seth Godin, is sometimes he writes blog posts that are no more than 150 words. And he, because he cuts to the chase, he tells you what he's talking about. I feel like if you've got something to say that really packs a punch, why say it in 500 words if you can say it in 200 words?
Right. Okay.
I mean, you know, and there are also some people that sometimes they will actually just post an image because it spoke to them for whatever reason. Maybe it's a meme, you know, an image with a saying on it. So the answer, in my opinion, is no. I don't think there is. As long as it's bringing something to the table that's of interest.
Right. And I think that, for me, is what I need to keep reminding myself, because sometimes I get a kick out of what I have to say, but I have to remind myself, is it a value, and what is it what people want to hear and read? So thank you very much.
Great. Awesome.
Hi, Tracy. My name's Heather. I have two questions, actually.
Okay, great.
So the first one is about the images. Actually, they're both about the images. But the first one I wanted to ask, on your list of where to get free photos, I'm just wondering what you know about PhotoPen and if you would suggest using that to get free images.
Did you say PhotoPen?
I think it's PhotoPen.
Like P-E-N?
P-I-N, yeah, photopen.com.
No, and you can tell because I'm asking you that I've not heard of that.
Okay.
So I can't help you with that one. I'm glad you said that, though. I'll explore it when we get off the phone and see what I think. But I really don't know about that.
Okay. And then my other question is related to images as well, and it was in regards to information about how to save the picture. And I wasn't clear on, was that saving it onto your computer?
Right. Yes. I download it to my computer, and I use a Mac, so I don't know if it would be a different procedure on a PC, but I simply do save as and retitle it, and that's when I stick my keywords in there and my description in there. So I save it to my desktop. And then when I drag it into my blog post, it lives in my blog post, and I just toss it from my desktop in the trash because I don't need it again.
Okay. And so when you save it onto your computer, you're using the keywords that you know Google likes.
I'm using the keywords that I decided to use in my blog post, hopefully the ones I used in my title, if it all came together the way I wanted it to. And sometimes it doesn't, and I'd rather not spend a lot of time fighting with the words to make them work on the page and let it flow naturally. But if I can make it work and use those keywords in the photo as well, that's what I do. Like my Brady Bunch example, it worked to do it that way for that particular picture, for that particular blog post.
Okay. And then saving it with, I'm sorry, this is more questions than I said I had, but I'll be talking to more are coming. But,
okay.
So saving the image with, for example, what you put on the first one listed, you know, Brady Bunch, Blended Family, TracyRayCoaching.com.jpg. So that wouldn't come across as suggesting that image is yours. It's okay to... There's no, like, legal issues with that, basically, is I guess what I'm wondering.
Right. As long as you have gotten the image from a place that says you can use it, it's fine for you to rename it and use it any way that you want. Now, to get attribution, what the people are wanting you to do when they want attribution is they want you to put it somewhere in the blog post, a thank you for the photo courtesy of, that sort of phrasing, which you can do like at the very bottom of the blog post, and you can actually put it in very gray light type so that it doesn't distract anybody from your blog post, but you're still giving attribution. You can give attribution, you could give attribution in your saving your image that way, but it's not useful for you to do that, and it's not the attribution they're looking for. So that's why I wouldn't do it that way. I'd use that for the Google juice, because it's, Google spiders are going to get a kick out of that and read it just like it's reading your other content and help to increase your page rank. So, you know, you could do it. You could give them attribution, but that's not where they're going to look for it anyway. They're going to look for it on your blog post to see where you said, hey, thanks, Sam, for this photo. I'm not sure if I've answered your question. Did that answer your question?
It did. It did. Yeah. And actually, I've been blogging for, I guess it's been 2 years, but I always get my photos when I get them. I usually get them from PhotoPen. And when I save it, when I put the image into my blog post, you know, there's a little caption basically when you're saving the picture. And I always just cut and paste, you know, what the licensing agreement says for me to put in my, you know, for the photo credit. It's just like a basic, like, you cut and paste, and then when you're saving the image into your blog post, the photo credit becomes part of the image. So at the bottom of the picture, it'll say photo credit, and then it'll give the credit. Is that what you mean, or are you speaking more directly into the text of the post?
Because I'm looking at PhotoPen right now to see what you're talking about, I'd have to explore it a little further. But I'm talking about the attribution that it is my understanding that the owner of the photo anticipates you're going to do will be somewhere on your blog post. Typically, it's at the very bottom that somebody will say photo courtesy of. Sometimes it's at the bottom of the photo. Sometimes it's at the bottom of the post, and most places that want you to attribute their photo don't dictate to you that specifically where they want you to put it. I don't know about PhotoPen, but like with the other one that I put listed on here, not Morgfile, but Digital Photos, Free Digital Photos, they like the photo courtesy of. Verbiage, and they just want you to put it somewhere, wherever. They didn't even tell you where, just put it somewhere.
Somewhere. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure. Anybody else out there?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Tracy. Thank you for your presentation. I have a question. Can you use Facebook for blogging? And if you can, what are the pros and cons of going that route, as opposed to using a blog site?
You broke up, but I think what I understood you to say is, can you use Facebook as your blog, and what would be the pros and cons of doing that? Did I hear that right?
Yes, correct, yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, you can do that. I don't know that I would say that it's a real strong point. I mean, part of the reason that I am such a rah-rah fan of blogging is because of the benefits that it brings to your website for driving website traffic to your site.
Okay.
Now, it's cool if you want to drive, if you're going to use Facebook as maybe your primary platform and driving people there is your aim. I'm just a big fan of people having a website. That's
right.
What most of us expect. So the downside would be that you're missing the traffic to your website if you have one by doing that. Now, the positive side is that Facebook is the most popular social platform. So if you don't have a website, that is certainly a viable and logical thing to do if you don't have a website. And if I didn't have a website, I'd probably go that route. But it's very important when you build your business that you have a place where people land that belongs to you, that sounds like your professional business that you are. Mm-hmm. And Facebook should be leading people to that as opposed to really being that.
Right. And the reason I ask is because I'm really new to all the social media, but I'm actually trying to work on developing a business. I'm in graduate school now. And then I'm planning, you know, I'm supposed to be finishing up in a couple of months. And I just, like, it's so much. And I have young kids. So I thought, can I just use Facebook? But it makes total sense. You want to drive them to something more personal.
Right.
Facebook.
I see. Right. And there is a place to do that on Facebook. I'll also say that it's been my experience, and your experience may be very different, that I don't read blogs there. I've seen a few, but it's not like a blogging platform. So
right.
That's just not the driving force of Facebook. But I will say I've done a Facebook module that I will repeat again, and it's important to note that if you want to do business on Facebook, you need a Facebook business page and not do it on your profile. So that would
okay.
be another thing to think about. If for your coaching practice you're going to have a Facebook page for your coaching practice and blogging there, again, makes a certain amount of sense unless you have a website that you're trying to drive traffic to. But if you're using your personal profile to do the blogging, then you're really missing the business opportunity.
Right.
Does
right.
that make sense? I mean,
that makes perfect, yeah. perfect sense. Great. Yeah, thank you very, very
sure.
much.
Sure.
All right.
And thank you guys for your questions. Are there any other ones? I'm here till you're done asking. I don't want you to leave confused by anything. So whatever it is, I'm here till you're done. Well, we may be done, Amy, unless there's somebody sitting in the queue.
No, I think our crowd is dwindling, and I think everybody's got their questions answered.
Okay, wonderful. Well, for anybody who is here, at the end of your PDF is my contact information, and I would love to hear from you what you got out of it. Maybe if there was something missing that you wanted to know, if it was too much, too little, I'd love your feedback. So shoot me a line. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
You too.